This is Pop and Crap, episode 163. Everyone, welcome to Pop and Crap, episode 163. I'm Paul, and I'm reminding you that just last week you heard the beginning of our top five 90s action shows, and today you're going to hear the rest, and so I'm just going to throw it back to past us so that you can hear the rest of our choices for 90s action shows. So here it is.
I'm going to actually pick one that Shaw mentioned earlier, and it's a spinoff of the show that Fox gave a chance to, whereas this show itself did not get a chance paid to it. And that is The Lone Gunman, because for me, The X-Files is all about the... It was all about the conspiracy theories, right? It was all about just the ridiculousness of these conspiracies and that sort of thing. And and because that was at a time when, you know, conspiracy theories were cute, abstract things, as opposed to things that your cousin spouts on Facebook and you're just like, wow, I'm just going to need to block you. And so the Lone Gunman were a lot of fun back then. You know, I don't know if now if I'd watch it where it'd be like, oh my God, stop.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? Where you're like, that was a time where it was like, oh, this is fun. This is different.
Isn't that amusing?
It's like, oh.
And they were always fun, you know, because there was always like that great episode. And this is the episode that actually led to the creation of the Lone Gunman series.
Yes.
Where if we remember, like there was that cigarette smoking man episode where they kind of got into his past and how he's this frustrated writer. And and then they show this meeting where, you know, because remember at the time, like the Bills were always perennial Super Bowl opponents, never winners. There was a whole thing about so who do we like for the Super Bowl? And he's like, well, and they're like, how about we just let the Bills have it this year? And he's like, no, as long as I'm alive, the Bills will never win a Super Bowl. and you get into seeing, you know, this was a whole his story as related by the Lone Gunman. And then the Lone Gunman series came out, and you know, and so we got to see this and we got to experience it. And you know, as I say this, I'm realizing it came too late. It came too late. This is exactly what you were talking about, Scott. So the Lone Gunman is off the table.
Is it the 2000 series?
It's that one lands off the table. But I will go to another X-Files spinoff, and one that I quite enjoyed, and this starred Lance Henriksen, who we knew from
great choice,
the Terminator and other many other things, but Millennium, where he played Frank Black, named for the Pixies singer. And and the fact is that there was I mean, this whole idea of sort of, if you look at a an X-Files franchise, I guess it falls in, right? And most importantly, it started in 1996, and this kind of fed into a lot of the paranoia over the whole Y2K thing, right? And the changing of the millennial and what that meant. And so you had Frank Black, who had shown up in the X-Files. And so he had this ability to see inside the minds of criminals. And he worked for this mysterious organization called the Millennium Group.
Yeah.
And again, so many similarities, right? Also filmed in Vancouver, being shot for Seattle, and music by Mark Snow. So mm-hmm. everything was pretty similar. And so he was a freelance forensic profiler and a former FBI agent. Mm-hmm. And he lived in Seattle. He had a wife and a daughter. And his daughter seemed to have some of his gift, right? His ability
right.
to see into these minds. And yeah. so most of it, in most of that first season, he was going after serial killers.
Yes.
And really, they didn't talk a lot about the group's true purpose, right? But then the second yeah. series, they got more into this supernatural occurrences. He was often coming up against these apocalyptic demonic forces. And then in the last season, he went back to Washington, to work with the FBI. And,
right.
His wife had been killed by the group and mm-hmm. all these things. And he had a partner, who she played by, I'll find out in a second. And anyway, all kinds of crazy stuff going on with the group. And after the show was completed, they actually did an X-Files episode that sort of served as a series finale for his character.
Oh, okay, okay.
All right. And Clea Scott played his next partner, which was Emma Hollis.
Right.
And mm-hmm. I mean, she's best known for this. I remember her from a show previous to that called Brooklyn South, but anyway, there we go. And we also had Terry O'Quinn, who would later become Locke on Lost.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Bill Smitrovich was in it. CCH Pounder.
Oh wow. Okay. Oh,
interesting. Kristen Cloak, who Ella and I were just she played she was in season two. She was part of the Millennium Group. As I mentioned, Ella and I watched Final Destination. And she played one of the teachers that was supposed to get on the plane with the rest of the class.
Oh, and, wow. Okay.
So everything's coming full circle.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And yeah. I love shit like this. Anyway, so that's my show. Calling in Audible, moving out the 2000 Lone Gunman and substituting them for Millennium. Both were mm-hmm. on my list because I loved me some X-Files spinoffs.
Yes, yes.
All right, Scott, it is to you.
All right.
Well, I'm so happy to have the conch again. I am going with I'm going to end with some good straight up action series from the decade. I am jumping to 1993. You know that I love one season shows, and you know that I love one season shows that don't even get a full season. Mm-hmm. This was a 6 episode wonder.
Oh no.
Oh,
how rude. Oh,
I knew this was coming. It's
brief.
That's why I never wanted to mention it.
I'm going Space Rangers.
I know you are.
Oh, I love that you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know.
This is Jeff Cake was the lead actor. He was best known for Viper.
Mm-hmm.
Marjorie Monaghan. Clint Howard, young up-and-comer. Jack McGee, who you may not know by name. Character actor, 240 roles. Usually plays the cop, the carpenter, the custodian, the New York-y type guy who doesn't give a damn, often seen chewing on a cigar. Linda Hunt of she did one of the JAG series.
She's like a lead in NCIS LA that's been on for years. And won an Oscar, by the way, for some show.
She reminds me of like a real live was it Edna Node from
The Incredibles. She is totally her. She is totally based on her. There is like not only literally no doubt, but they have said that they based her on Linda Hunt. It is simply a thing. I just wanted to mention her film debut was in Robert Altman's Popeye. She won an Oscar. I mean, how can I not find this? The Year of Living Dangerously. She won the Oscar in 1982.
With Mel Gibson.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, she won the Best Supporting Actress Oscar. So okay. I mean, let's acknowledge the game here. I mean,
yes.
I mean, come on. Yeah, you've bravo, sir. And I've literally never heard of the show. Jack McGee was in it.
Jack McGee.
Jack McGee, who was in with Laurie Metcalf as his wife in some show.
He's done one episode of damn near everything, literally 240 roles. I mean, the guy is
Like Rescue Me and Turk 182, Lethal Weapon 2, Born on the 4th of July.
Took 182 was just good,
right?
It goes on totally and on and on.
Underrated. You're right, Scott. It is a ridiculous list. Yeah, he's been
that guy. You look at him, you're like, oh, that guy. He's that guy who's in everything I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Whenever you want somebody to kind of snarl at somebody with like a New York accent and while chewing on a cigar and expressing that he doesn't give a damn about whatever situation it is, he's your guy.
Yeah. The McCarthy's show I was thinking of, which
Pat Morita did an episode of this.
Yeah.
Eddie Hackett did an episode of the series. It only had 6 episodes. Like,
yeah.
They were trying.
I've never heard of it.
It's called Space Rangers. It's literally about a bunch of space cops.
Clint Howard was the doctor.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's set in the future. It was at that era where everybody was like, hey, I think we can use computers to start doing some special effects.
Yes.
And so you've got really low end, like somebody got an Amiga or something like that and made some
hey guys, spaceships. Check out my video toaster, look what I can do.
Totally. Yes. It's totally what it is.
Yeah.
But they made ships and they instead of doing like a warp drive, the idea was that you had these kind of bridges that you go through, these tubes that would launch you. So you had to go through these accelerators essentially.
Hey guys, I haven't got the preset for the warp speed thing, but I can do that portal.
Totally. Like you go through these rings and it fires you off in the direction that you need to go. It was very early, it's post Star Wars, where hey, look, the ships look old, beat up, and exist, and pre-Firefly, the ships look old, beat up, and exist. These ships looked old, beat up, and existed in the real world. McGee's character was a man who had several body parts replaced with cybernetics. But he couldn't afford the good ones, so his arm would routinely, kind of tweak out, and then he'd like put a little screwdriver in a part and kind of dial it back. There was an episode where he got a really good startle. Somebody scared the shit out of him and his heart stopped. And so he pounded on his chest and his chest opened like a CD drawer. And he took a disc out of the drawer beat it with his hand a couple of times and loaded it back in. So he essentially gave CPR to himself. Like, it was, it was just the weirdest goddamn sci-fi series. There's six episodes. It does exist on DVD. Because a buddy of mine pulled this out and showed it to me, thinking that he was showing me something I'd never seen before. And I lost my mind at the sight of it, because I never knew that it made it to DVD, because I was still clinging to my old VHS tapes at the time. So it was a, it was an odd little series. They were very big on the idea of, while being, you know, an insanely sci-fi spacey series, what would it be like? And, you know, every time that they'd come out of their little warp drive jumps or whatever it was, you know, half the crew would throw up because of the motion sickness that came along with it. It wanted to be so much bigger than it was, and I loved it for that. I think that's the best way to sum it up.
I think they were trying really hard to be close to Red Dwarf as they possibly could without being Red Dwarf.
Having never seen Red Dwarf, that could be.
Right. Well, Red Dwarf was the British version.
Okay.
Right. And Red Dwarf was really, really well done. It lasted for about 12 years. And it had some familiar people in it that you've literally seen today. However, the thing about it was that it was just the same thing. It was, you know, it was just it's like sole survivor of a radiation leak on a mining ship, the last human known alive, and all these different things. And so you could see in Space Rangers, they pull some of the elements from it, right? But, and they tried. I know they really tried, but, you know, it, I could see why it lasted six episodes. But I also see where the potential could have been.
Yeah.
Right. In it being something more. And you have to remember, that also set the stage for, you know, another show that you love later on, because it was all in the same realm of, like, you know, sci-fi stories in space, Space Rangers, and, you know, look what Whedon did in 2002 as a result.
Well, that's exactly it. It feels like a pre-Firefly in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Because it is, you know, just the beat up ship that is a real physical thing. And it's about, in the same way the Millennium Falcon is, it's, you know, it's where you punch it on the dashboard to make it do what you want to do.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
It was fun. It was unique at the time. I dug it, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
So that was my fourth. My fifth, we're jumping back to 1991. This was a 7-episode series.
Right.
On NBC Disney. It's interesting because it was on NBC. It was a Disney show, and which is odd because Disney is usually paired with ABC.
Right.
But here it was. It's called The 100 Lives of Black Jack Savage.
Oh my God.
Right?
I know. God, I forgot about that show.
It starred Daniel Hugh Kelly.
Yeah.
Who I originally knew and loved from Hardcastle and McCormick. Which I think made our 80s series. I would hope I did.
Yeah.
Roma Downey was in it, who went on to be in Touched by an Angel.
Yeah.
It was a series about so Daniel Hugh Kelly plays a greedy and corrupt Wall Street guy who's hiding from the FBI in the Caribbean. And the house that he owns was originally owned by this pirate. And in between, it was owned by this drug dealer. And so the ghost of the pirate is kind of haunting him. Mm-hmm. And that together they're on a mission to save 100 souls so that the pirate can get out of hell and the banker guy can be prevented from going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this show should have been in the 80s. It's so displaced in this time period.
Yeah.
And right down to, and it features a cool vehicle, because they gave it a there was a boat that they ran around with called, it was a Blackbird, and it was based on the Blackbird, the same one that we've seen from the X-Men use.
Right. The Blackbird, yeah.
And so they had this super jet boat that originally belonged to the drug smuggler.
Yeah.
Who previously owned the house. And they put so much into the way they developed this world. They there's a problem where anytime the pirate left the mansion, he could be dragged off to hell through the tree where he had been hung when he lived by these demons from hell. And the banker was trying to dodge the FBI all around the island every time he left the mansion. So they're both wanted men in very different ways. Both not necessarily good people by nature, trying very much to save their souls through these you know, acts of kind of trying to save people each week. And every week's episode ended with blank. It was a number, lives to go. As it faded out, it would bring up a black screen that would be like, you know, 97 lives to go as they continued to serve. It was such a straight up 80s style action movie or action series of the week. It was all about, you know, every week involved some kind of, you know, save the day, but there was some kind of shootout. There was some kind of chase with the fancy boat that always looked in every scene like it was about to explode. Every time this thing hit anything less than super calm waters, the ripples through the body of this boat were ridiculous. Yeah. But it was just, it was a goofy, delightful action series. And I think that's why I loved it when I saw it at the time. I have only seen a couple of the episodes. I have not seen the full seven. Love to see the rest of it. And I think it's worth noting that the executive producer was Stephen J. Cannell, who brought us a lot of fantastic series, like The A-Team, Renegade, The Rockford Files, 21 Jump Street, Greatest American Hero. I mean, there's a reason that this feels like a lost 80s series, and I think his fingerprints are a big, big part of it.
Well, one thing we have to acknowledge in the fact that Cannell took a lot of that into the 90s, but a lot of it was in syndication. And like, listen, I can name a couple here, and I guarantee you it's not even on his list. Right? It's not on any one of your lists. The one prime one is Booker. You guys remember Booker?
Yeah.
Do not.
Okay, so Booker was the spinoff for 21 Jump Street.
Yeah.
Richard
Grieco.
Richard Grieco. So this is like, you know what I mean? So he still continued.
Now I remember it.
Yeah. And then he did, Cannell also was behind Fred Dreyer's. Oh my gosh, what was that show where he was in? After Hunter in the 90s. It was Something Paradise.
Oh.
Huh.
I can't remember. Let's look and see. But he had done the show, and it was Cannell again, and it took it into the 90s. So he was still doing his thing. It's just that these shows didn't have the same staying power as they had in the 80s. So we knew it was dying.
Yeah. Sorry, Scott, which show were you talking about? Because I had to step out for a minute there.
Oh, yeah. 100. the 100 Lives of Black Jack Savage.
Right.
On NBC. Yeah. It was a Disney production, which was an odd pairing from, because it wasn't with ABC. It was a fun series, but it was a real holdover from the 80s.
It
was Daniel Hugh Kelly from Hardcastle McCormick. And
wow. I know Land's End, that was the name of it. Land's End, Fred Wright. But no, and this is why these shows sort of had this didn't have the strong staying power. No, but is that, again, it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, but that was such a fun show. It really was such a fun show.
Yeah. But I mean, it was one of those ones where, like, there's no doubt about how it was good, Mando. You knew the Goon Gamers were going to win every week. And I think that was the cornerstone of the previous decades worth of, you know, the weekly action series was,
right.
It wasn't a question of if they were going to win, it was a question of how. And
right.
This totally fit that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, interestingly, this show, co-created by Glenn Morgan, and James Wong, who would later go on to create, wait for it, The Lone Gunman.
I'm pretty sure that if we got out the push pins and the red yarn, we could
everything would tie together. Yeah,
everything would.
Yeah,
literally everything would. No,
it's awesome. So that's my last one, and I left those two for the end because I thought there's no way in hell you guys are gonna pick them.
I was today years old when I first heard of the 100 Lives of Black Jack Savage.
It was fun. Yeah. It was, super one of a kind, but a good time.
Yes. Nice. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, I'm going
to. So I think that comes back to you, sir.
Yeah. I'm going to steer away from what might have been my pick, Angel, which, was a great show. In fact, in its heyday, certainly by the second season when it really started to pick up, I was looking at that as, wow, I enjoy this more than I enjoy Buffy. Those last couple of seasons of Buffy were rough. And and this was like, wow, you know, this is really doing a thing. But it is not my pick.
I hear you. I'd be inclined to save that for something to fight over in the 2000s because it only did 1 year in the 90s, but it did 4 years in the 2000s.
Yeah, but it would be ineligible for the 1000s because, of course, it started in 1990.
Is that the way we're drawing the lines?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I could pick me some MacGyver. I could, you know, all these things. But those are 80s series. My next one actually is going to tie right back to my first one, and that is Batman Beyond.
Nice.
Again, nice one. Bruce Timm, Paul Dini, Alan Burnett. But they went took a different tack with it. They took us to an era where Bruce Wayne was no longer Batman. And in fact, again, this goes back to when we were talking about, you know, Kevin Conroy as the Dark Knight Batman. Yeah. Kind of ties into where he could have been the Batman of the Bruce Wayne that inspired the Terry McGinnis Batman. And so this is a future timeline in 2039, the idea being that Batman in 2019 was in his late 50s and continues to fight crime in a new high-tech bat suit, and suffers a heart attack and at the risk of being beaten to death by kidnappers is forced to betray a lifelong principal. And anyway, it ends up with Bruce being ashamed of using a gun. And so he retires from being Batman.
Yeah.
And then 20 years later in 2039, which isn't that far away now, guys, there's this, you know, now Bruce is in his 70s, lives in bitter isolation in Wayne Manor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just got his guard dog Ace. And then this kid, Terry McGinnis, shows up. And he was voiced by Will Friedle, who some might remember as the older brother in Boy Meets World.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah, he's this athletic student and reformed troublemaker, but has this deeply ingrained sense of personal justice. Was having a difficult time with his father. And so one day he gets out of, he disobeys his curfew, meets up with his girlfriend, gets harassed by a gang called the Jokers. I don't know where they're going with that, but and there's a high-speed motorcycle chase between him and the Jokers that ends in the grounds of Wayne Manor, where they run into the elderly Bruce Wayne. And side by side, they fight off. He and Bruce fight off the guys, and it's a whole, it's a whole thing. And anyway, I don't want to give away any of it because you should check it out. Anyway, it's a great series where you've got Bruce Wayne great is series. Now, supporting this younger version of Batman. And, it isn't him training a Robin. It isn't any of that stuff. It is like, I got to train this guy to be the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fantastic series. And everyone needs to check it out because it is one of the best, in continuing the mythos and just making it more of what it was.
I will say this. It that show made such an impact that there was given no choice but to add it to Batman's mythos in the comic books.
Yeah.
Because it was so powerful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can appreciate it. Even now they're talking about doing this Batman Beyond movie. They've been talking about it for a few years now, right? Where the Bruce Wayne is the Michael Keaton's Batman.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, it's really funny how an animated series had created such an impact. And let's go back to the first one of the Batman, the animated series.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for that series, we would not have gotten Harley Quinn.
100%. I mean, right. I mean, the things that it has contributed to the mythos as a whole.
Yeah.
As well as just bringing more people in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
It just added to it. So
Sorry, we were talking earlier about the Batman animated series, and you talked about the Mask of the Phantasm. Yeah. One of the things that I didn't get to mention at the time was the world's finest crossover between Batman and Superman. That movie, I will still hold that up to this day as 100% watchable, fully stands up, one of the greatest superhero movies around to date.
The world's finest, which one? Public Enemies? Batman
and Superman.
No. World's Finest. Okay.
Yeah. And from Batman Beyond, you get Return of the Joker, which is a fantastic animated film. If you can find the version, the unedited version, or the uncensored, or the unrated, or whatever the hell it was,
right?
It's so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
Fills in the gap between the story of the original Batman and this one.
Yeah,
it's really well done.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, you can't go wrong with Batman Beyond. I mean,
yeah. You no, it's true. You can't. You
no, it appeared wrong. And it was such a game changer because it really contributed so much new content thinking idea to the mythos, because when Batman the Animated Series came out, we loved it, but
yeah,
so much of it was just, you know, hey, it's Mr. Freeze, hey, it's the Joker, hey, it's Poison Ivy. I mean, it was everybody we already knew, and mm-hmm. it was just a really well done version of that which we already knew and have experienced. And aside from the Harley Quinn character was fantastic, it didn't really contribute a lot of new. It's certainly nothing compared to what Batman Beyond did. Batman Beyond was just, we're going to go in a whole different direction.
It's the Star Trek Voyager of Batman.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because now we're going to explore territory where we're not bound to the things that we've seen in the source material.
Yeah. Well, and eventually they get to a part where they introduce a Justice League of that time.
Yeah.
And that was amazing too. I mean, it was
absolutely,
they did so much good stuff with that.
Oh my God.
That idea. Yeah.
Yeah. That, I still say one of the best scenes was, Terry McGinnis introducing the current Batman in the Justice League and his Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever remembered it. It's like they meet in, I think it was in the Batcave, and Batman Beyond's character says, Bruce Wayne, Batman, Batman, mm-hmm. Bruce Wayne, not now.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So it created a lot of great moments. But here's the thing too. It's so strong that they really haven't done anything since. Because I don't think, like, they've been trying to measure up to it for such a long time that they just haven't been able to. So I think Batman Beyond was the pinnacle of the Batman mythos, to the point where they really haven't done a lot. Like, they're trying to do stuff now, but it doesn't measure up to the introduction of Batman Beyond.
Yeah.
No, so it's so important now. That's why your choice is a wonderful choice.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So, wait, does that mean I have one more?
You have the last pick. You bring us on home, sir.
Yeah. I will take you home. Okay. So the reason why...
One more. I'm just going through the list.
Okay. So here's the thing. The reason why I picked this show wasn't the fact that I actually liked this show, but I picked it because it was actually introduced on main network, and it was one of the early shows that went and sort of transferred over into the syndicated network. And you never seen that done unless a show in the main networks actually ran for 100 episodes. Now that has dropped now. Right. So the show I'm talking about came out in 1991 in CBS. And the funny thing about it, they used to call the time where this show was being shown crime time after prime time. I don't know if you remember that.
Nope.
Yeah. Okay. So the name of the show is called Silk Stockings.
Oh, wow.
Right. So it was shown, I think it was only for 2 seasons, right, on CBS. But then all of a sudden, US Network, I guess, bought the series and they kept it running till 1999. And guess what? It's Stephen J. Cannell's one of his longest running series. Right. And it was with Robert Estes and Mitzi Katcher. So I don't know if you all ever saw the show or remembered it. Right. But it was just a detective show. And it literally, it was just one of those where sometimes I would watch it and it would be very good. And then sometimes I would watch an episode. I'm like, what are they thinking? Right. But it had this following that just, you know, and it was, the whole show was a play on words from the term silk stockings. So they used to call it silk stockings. Right. But again, the only reason why I brought this one up was because of, it was one of the early shows I can remember where another network bought it and continued the series. Now it seems to be a normal thing now.
Everybody's afraid to cancel their shows now because they don't want somebody else to pick it up. But
yeah,
back so then, far less heard of.
Yeah, so they did it, and it was literally, like, it was literally a U.S. network picked it up, and it became a huge hit for them. So it's like, wow, that was really weird at the time. But, and they didn't really have a lot of well-known people on it. And even, you know, Mitzi Kapchan and Robert Estes. Mike Post did the title track for the show. Right, but yeah, it was just one of those. And
you're gonna get someone to do your music, get Mike Post.
I guess so. So, and the last thing I heard was Anchor Bay released the series, but I don't know how many they actually released. So yeah, so my last pick is Silk Stockings.
Bravo, sir. I'm not familiar.
Yeah, it's just one of those shows. So,
Incredible pick.
Yeah, it was one of the weird ones, but it was this like action crimes, sometimes slow moving, sometimes action packed, right? But they had this kind of Miami Vice feel to it as well, too. Nice. Right, so it was just, yeah, it was just one of those. So, but I have to say quickly, nice. I know we don't do honorable mentions, but my you do?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Honorable mention, Martial Law, Sammo Hung, Arsenio Hall.
And that was the one that I was going to say when you said, I don't know, Nash Bridges was too on the nose.
Yeah.
It was like, no, but I stayed away from Martial Law. But again, that was one of my ex's favorites.
And
not wrong. I mean, it was fun.
No, it was fun. It was fun. And I am a big fan of Kelly Yu. So, yeah.
Because of that. I mean, that was a career maker for her, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
That and Lady Deathstrike.
Well, but that was later.
That's true. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So, so we've got all of our picks. Mm-hmm. Yes. All right. So, sorry, Sean, what was the last one?
Oh, the last Silk Stockings.
Right. Okay. So, all right. So we have some outstanding lists. I'm going to just recap them.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Scott, you had Sliders. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Sliders.
Sliders. Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, Star Trek Voyager, Space Rangers, and The 100 Lives of Black Jack Savage. Yeah. Sean, you had Brimstone, Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., The Sentinel, The Pretender, and Silk Stockings. And I had Batman the Animated Series, Nash Bridges, The Flash, Millennium, and Batman Beyond.
Cool.
So there we go. Well, I think,
can we just go watch these shows right now?
I think we have nailed down three outstanding lists of stuff that everybody needs to watch.
Yeah.
Did you have a bench, Paul?
It was Sliders. I had Stargate SG-1 and Angel.
Yeah, I had Angel as well. Stargate, I hadn't watched Stargate as a series. Mm-hmm. Speak to it. Angel, I mean,
I that, did not I want
agree with your point.
Yeah. Hmm? Sorry, I did not want to mention Angel because of Buffy.
Yeah, I just kind of thought that I'd tuck Angel away and leave him for the 2000s. Because I didn't know that we were going with the premiere date as the rule, because, you know, 80% of that series takes place in the 2000s. So I was like, ah, it's good. We'll tuck it over there.
Yeah.
But I agree with your point about... Yeah, I agree with your point about that there was a time period where Angel was the show you were watching and Buffy was what came on before it. And that wasn't the case initially, where it was you were watching right. Buffy and Angel came on after it. Then it right. was you were watching Angel and Buffy came on first.
Right. Yeah.
And I had a list of series that my bench was made up of shows that I hadn't watched, but I thought if I got wiped out,
mm-hmm.
I was going to have to go to these other series just because I knew they were important and that other people liked them.
Right, right.
So I had stuff like Farscape, FX the series, Femikita, nice. Sequest DSV, Early
Boy Edition. Scheider.
You know, there was a lot of stuff in there. That,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I never watched any of those shows, but I know that they were a big deal to a lot of people. So.
Oh, sure. But
yeah,
you want to have at least seen it too.
You know, I can't speak to them. It was literally if I got cleaned out, I needed to have something to go to. And so these were there.
It seems like we didn't actually, you know, for all of our talk individually about how tough a category this was this time around.
Yeah,
we had no shortage of shows. I mean,
no, we didn't. And you look, Seagate, you just brought up. That was the modern day version of Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Or
of, you know, the 1960s Seagate series.
It's Seagate. Yeah.
I mean, literally, it was a sequel to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
No, so yeah, I mean, there were a lot. It's just, I think it was difficult coming out of the 80s knowing the clear cut of what an action show was.
Yeah.
And then coming into the 90s, you realize the mindset had changed, right? But we're all, I mean, in some ways, we are still product of some of the stuff in the 80s.
Absolutely.
So,
totally.
So looking at these shows, it's like, well, it could be, but maybe, you know, so we kind of go with it and see. Although there's some of those, which is why I'm saying, Paul, your list is amazing, because I, even though I thought about it, the animated series really kept it going.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was a change. It was a period of change where the doing things the same way wasn't working. So, you know, these are animated series that don't at all have any adherence to how animated series were done in the 80s.
Right. Yeah.
And so there's already a divergence there, but then you have a lot of shows that kind of had influence in the 80s, but we're like, correct. Yeah, but we're going to go the opposite way. You know, how do we deconstruct this into something new? And that's what I think is the real key to this period is, you know, Scott mentioned earlier, it being a rebuilding year, a rebuilding decade, really.
Right.
And it was a, how do we make this, you know, how do we make, these same packages at sometimes move forward and how do we just get rid of them and that's really a big part of it.
Take these examples. Would you consider NYPD Blue an action show?
Was one that I had kind of earmarked as, like, it's interesting because in this decade, action drifted to drama. It was as if there was this knee-jerk reaction that was, okay, we're done with the ridiculous. If there's going to be this level of excitement, action, violence, it's got to be grounded with some kind of dramatic reasoning.
And you're right. And they even, you know, they reconstructed how the cop show was done. And hey, there are a few people who are bigger NYPD Blue fans than I am. I mean, I love the show. It didn't land anywhere near my list because, yes, this got nailed it. I looked at it more as a cop drama. I mean, there was, you know, it's like, I'm not going to look at, you know, I'm going to look at those as police procedurals.
Yes.
So yes. I'm going to kind of bury that in the same box that I put Law and Order in.
Right.
And and so I wouldn't look at that as an action show. I would look at it more as a drama, a police procedural. And
if you look at a decade or two earlier, I mean, that's your Starsky and Hutch, right?
Right. Well, but
you go, but
yeah.
Yeah. But you go a decade later and you got Hill Street Blues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This kind of this I don't know, spectrum, but, or just it
but evolved. Not only wouldn't I, but I didn't look at Hill Street Blues as one of those shows as well when we did the 80s version of this list. So I mean, it definitely, like a cop show, you know, a typical cop show, but you know, maybe it's the fact that it takes place in a precinct that makes it more of a procedural. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly. But it feels different from that. And yeah, Scott nails it. Like, that's exactly it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because there was a time when a cop show by definition would have been, that's an action show.
Yep.
Yeah.
And moves into, no, that's a drama. And now it's in the same pool as the lawyer shows and the doctor shows.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's interesting to watch, you know, kind of that evolution over time.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Look at us being all smart and shit.
Good job, everyone. And now let's actually think about Sean, what's your pop of the week?
My pop of the week. Oh my God. Okay. So I was scanning through and my pop of the week has to be Michael Coulter's Evil.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And I have been so...
Have you started the new season?
I started the new season. It is out. It's on its third episode. And let me tell you, this was very different. It's really an ambitious project that they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's totally different from what I've seen on television. They're literally giving you an elaboration of what a proper horror movie is supposed to be like.
Yeah.
Right. And the fact that everyone on that show, whether it is directly or indirectly, is affected by evil.
Yeah.
And it's the varying levels of evil in this. And it's just fascinating to watch. Right. And they still manage to put in the CGI of all these beasts that are basically haunting them. You know, it is so well done.
Cool. I haven't watched much past the first season, but I've seen it sitting there on Paramount Plus, and I will watch it at some point.
Yeah, it is.
It's great, and it's a great cast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So that's my pop of the week.
Very nice. Scott, what do you got? Great.
Yeah, I love that choice. We did the first couple of seasons. We haven't... As you can tell by my questions, I didn't realize that the third had actually started yet, but love that series. So good. That is a real...
Yeah.
That loves to grab you by your brain and just twist you around. It's fantastic.
Nice. Absolutely.
Where did my list go? Here we go. Um, why is it not there? Oh, I know what it is. This is an oldie, but I'm going to jump all over it. I saw Kelly's Heroes on Turner Classic Movies.
Nice.
A while back.
Clint Eastwood. Oh, yeah. Baby.
It's so good. The cast alone is crazy.
You just discovered this?
I knew of it. I just hadn't seen it before.
Yeah, and that's a whole different thing for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and so it finally came up. So it's 1970. It's an adventure comedy set in the war, like Clint Eastwood, Telly Savalas, Don Rickles of all people playing, you know, for drama. Carol O'Connor running around, Donald Sutherland, Gavin McLeod. Like it's such a list of names of the era. Harry Dean Stanton is running around in there. I totally dug it. The idea of the movie, for those who haven't seen it, is that a group of U.S. soldiers decides to sneak across enemy lines to get their hands on a secret stash of Nazi treasure. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the movie, Clint Eastwood is interrogating an officer, gets him drunk enough to admit that there is a big old stash of gold, literal gold bars, in a bank. And then it becomes this... it becomes a heist flick at that point. Yeah. And it's about assembling the right people and how many people do you need to get involved to pull this off, and how can we do it while nobody's looking, and how can we get away with successfully sneaking in and getting it. And then it switches back to a war drama, which is, I mean, I think that was the most interesting part, was the way they, you know, it was a, they kind of wrapped it in this comedy heist, but then all of a sudden, you know, there are points where it's Saving Private Ryan time. It's an odd shift, and I don't think that you'd see it in kind of a modern storytelling. I don't know that that's the kind of movie that would get made today, and that made it exciting to watch, because, you know, will I see that again someday in my lifetime, or am I just going to watch Marvel movies for the rest of my days? It was unique. It was original. Really enjoyed it. Found it on Turner Classic Movies. I'm sure there's other ways you can find it, but if nothing else, just keep your eyes peeled on whatever oldies movies channels you have in your local area that you have access to.
Yes. I think you bring up a great point, though. You won't see them doing a movie like this, not in the way that you've seen it done for Kelly's Heroes, because there is this level of seriousness to war movies now. So you really won't see this sort of movie. But that's a great choice, though. I haven't seen it in a few
MASH
years.
Ocean's 11, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, oh, people are dying and this shit is real.
It's just very weird. Back then it was all about the special unit or the group of guys in a unit that was doing these things. You take Guns of Navarone, Dirty Dozen, all these different shows, and they have this, it's always these bunch of guys in a unit going off to do something.
Yeah.
Right. And there's always this little element of humor into it, but then it flips, right? Because, for example, the training part for the Dirty Dozen, there's always a little bit of humor. Oh my God, the guy can't climb up a rope. Right, you know, and then you come back to reality, because now they're really going on the mission now, and, you know, so there's a seriousness now, as you said, it's that Saving Private Ryan sort of feeling.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, so, but yeah, that's a great point, and that's a great choice.
Thank you. It was you know, I try to every now and then just skip down to Turner Classic Movies, see what's coming, and mm-hmm. just, I call it casting the net. I don't know what I'm going to get. I'll go on the name of a movie I recognize. I'll go on, you know, name of a couple of cast members that I like, and just see what it is and what it's worth. And often I'm just flying blind. I don't know what I'm pulling in. And sometimes it's a real treat. And this one was fantastic. Really, really happy with it.
Good stuff. All right. So, Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Oh, I have to come up with one now. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, well,
I know. Nobody ever knows. I mean, we should have warned you. I'm sorry.
Indeed. Yes. I've talked about police procedurals a lot and how I kind of separated those. And actually, what I what I'm going to speak of, I've kind of planted seeds for throughout. It is Gotham Central, by written by Greg Rucka and Ed Brubaker. The art largely by Michael Lark, with some others along the way. And it is a police procedural set in Gotham City. And and it deals with cops like Crispus Allen and Renee Montoya and all of these different characters in a post-Gordon Gotham City Police Department who deal with you know, having to handle the regular crime that happens in Gotham, but also occasionally having that being touched on by the crazy element, and and you know, they're the ones that have to sort of clean up after and that sort of thing. It plays very much as a police procedural, even to the fact of borrowing the whiteboard motif that they use to great effect in Homicide: Life on the Street. You know, this idea of the whiteboard that they write their case on, and they've got it so that they've got to look at that name every day. Right. And so, you know, I need to, and now, funnily enough, early on, certainly it was some of the DC editors and other friends of theirs that would get named to the actual, you know, cover pages and that sort of thing. It very much reminded me of all that. And that was definitely enjoyable. And so, so the thing was that the omnibus of this, when it was done before, there was a lot left out, like literally like layers of Photoshop files that like showed snow in some of the things where they make a big deal about there being snow. So, you know, earlier editions, you were looking at it and it's like, but there's no snow. You know, you complain about this thing that doesn't happen. And but now it's all in. Brubaker had reached out to Marie Javins, who said, hey, well, I will get that sorted out for you. And you know, we've been looking to put this out again. And so now's a good time. And so it is the Gotham City PD omnibus. I highly recommend it. It is outstanding. It's like one of those things where I'll get on a jag with it and it's 40 issues worth. So I still got some stuff to work through, but it is me, you know, looking down and saying, oh, let's check out just a little bit more of this. And there goes a couple of hours. And I'm gonna deeply lament it when I run out.
Well, I'll tell you, I certainly love what they did with Renee Montoya.
Yeah.
Going forward from there. So I thought that was really good. And it's one of the, she's become part of the, one of the lesser known, well, I guess lesser known, but still a fairly popular character.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right? You know, we knew her from the animated series where she was, you know, paired up with Bullock.
That's right.
Right. And that's in this, you know, Bullock has been waylaid by an IAD investigation. Yeah, he'll be back. And and so, you know, because this series ended around Infinite Crisis. And I'm going to miss it when I get toward the end of it. But they are doing a real great job of, you know, catching up with and sort of keeping pace with the old Ed McBain pulp cop procedural books. So it's a delight. So there we have it. Mm-hmm. That is my pop of the week. So folks.
That is fantastic. I love that. That's wonderful. Yeah. Sean, thanks for doing this with us, buddy.
Yes, as always. It is really a delight.
I always love doing this.
Sean/CSN, is there anything you'd like to plug while we have you here?
Wow, really, guys?
Well, if there's anything you'd like to talk about,
well, I will certainly say this. Pop and Crap is going really strong on the radio, so I would like to thank you guys for that, because it's I even sit down and listen to the episodes on Saturday. Nice. So it's really wonderful. And just to let everyone else know that Love Letters is changing its format just a little bit, because I'm approaching my 50th issue. Or episode, rather. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Wow. Yes. Well, I'm not you guys, right? Like, you guys are like almost at 200.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
We're plotting along.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not going to, there's like leaps and bounds.
Hey, quantity doesn't beat quality.
So absolutely. You, sir. And speaking of which, let's wrap this one up. Before it becomes like five episodes. So everyone, you know, we want to hear your thoughts on what 90s TV shows were great adventure shows for you. And you can tell us that at our email, which is popandcrap@gmail.com. We are on the Twitter. We are Pop and Crap. And we are, of course, also found on the Facebooks at facebook.com/popandcrap, where we will, you know, listen to all of the things that you have to say. And so that is basically all the ways to get a hold of us. Scott?
If it doesn't involve Stephen J. Cannell and Terry Hatcher, everything else is just Pop and Crap. So you think you take another piece of me to satisfy your intellectual mood?